Padre Rinpoche, who lived from 1808 through 1887, was one of the greatest Tibetan teachers of the 19th century. Famous for his precise and direct style, he shunned high monastic office and lived the life of a homeless wanderer, writing his book in a rustic hermitage under an overhanging rock. We join Fred as he introduces Padre Rinpoche in his wonderful text, Advice from Me to Myself.
And was greatly loved because he had this capacity to be incredibly erudite, with scholars and people well-versed, but he also could be as simple and direct, with the most common person. There's a famous story told about him that he was traveling along the road somewhere, usually dressed in his fairly ragged outfit. And there was this very old woman going along and had her pack on her back, and he asked her where she was going, and she said she was going to this monastery. There was a great teacher being giving these teachings, and he said, "Oh, I'm going there too." And he said, let me carry your pack for you." And so for several days he traveled with this old woman carrying her pack. And then when they got to the monastery for this teaching, she was dumbfounded because he, after unloading her and helping her get settled, he walked up to the front and took the seat of teacher. So that is the kind of man Padre Rinpoche was. He was also famous for being the founder of what was called in Eastern Tibet the Rime movement. Tibet had, Buddhism had four different lineages and traditions and sublineages, and the Rime movement was a non-denominational movement to kind of get away from sectarianism and, my interpretation is better than your interpretation, and he really found the commonality of all traditions, Padre Rinpoche. So this is a poem entitled Advice from Me to Myself, and I think it's kind of wonderful because, most teachings of masters are very, they're very profound and they're very given to disciples, but we don't really often hear them addressing themselves. So again, I don't know if this was some sort of way of a form of writing of Buddhist teachers in Tibet or not, but he actually, at the end of it, he says, the colophon for this text, he says, "This advice was written by the practitioner Trime Lodro," and he put in parentheses Padre Rinpoche, which is, so this is one name, "for his intimate friend Padre Rinpoche, in order to give advice that is tailored exactly to his capacities. This advice should be put into practice." So I think that's quite wonderful, because if you think about it, who better really knows ourselves, we would hope, than ourselves, right? That we would know our strength and we would know our weaknesses. We would know our intentions and our aspirations and the way we want to be and how we want to live, and who would know the actuality of how we go about it? Who would be more in touch with those areas in our life that we need to look more deeply at, where we are not congruent with our values, our intentions, and ourself, right? So at this level, we would say, who knows myself better, hopefully, than myself? So the advice I'm giving myself should be quite on target, hopefully. So this is called Advice from Me to Myself. And it begins, "Listen up, old bad karma patrol." So he's talking about himself, calling himself old bad karma, it's mean like you. And then he says, "Listen up, old man, old karma patrol, you dweller in distraction." This is how he addresses himself. "You dweller in distraction." Many of us may identify with that phrase. Where do we dwell most of the time? And we're just all over the place. We are a dweller in distraction. Great term. So he says, listen up, old Karma Patchel, you dweller in distraction. For ages now, you've been fooled, beguiled, entranced by appearances. Are you aware of that? Are you? So, I mean, for those of you who are not familiar with kind of Buddhist outlook or psychology, this is a very key thing. We are fooled by appearances. Appearances means the way things appear. You know, we look at the objects of the world and they appear solid and real. And we think that the things of the world are sources of happiness and fulfillment and meaning for us, right? And we think things are permanent and they'll last forever, whether those are things, whether those are people and relationships, and even those are our own mental events, our emotions, right? So we appearances just are not how are things how they appear, but not necessarily how they really are, right? Like an echo, it appears to be coming from there, and appears to be somebody talking over there, right? But when we go to that place looking for that person, we won't find anything, right? We've been fooled by the way things appear, right? A child looks at a bubble and it appears to be this solid floating thing, right? But when they run after it and they grab it, what happens? It disappears. It was not as it appeared, right? We look at each other and we all think, oh, there is so-and-so and so-and-so, and we think we're always going to be that way, and they're always going to be that way. We look in the mirror, we say, oh, that's me, right? And yet we know the way things appear are not necessarily the way they really are, right? The fish in the ocean sees this delightful-looking, very delicious-looking piece of whatever, right? It thinks, this is going to give me great happiness and satisfaction, right, when I eat it. But then when it bites it, it didn't see the hook. And that which it appeared to be so delightful and delicious and a source of happiness becomes a source of suffering, right? And that is the way for many of us in the things that we are attracted to, even our own thoughts, our own stories, our own dramas, or many of the things in life, experiences, they look beguiling. We are beguiled. We are attracted. We think, happiness, meaning, joy. And yet it doesn't work out that way. We didn't see what was not so apparent to us. We didn't see it because we were projecting. We wanted it to be that way we wanted it to be. Or else we just didn't see all the hooks, right? We didn't really see. In the beginning, when we meet somebody, we think they are the repository of everything wonderful, don't we? And they will be the source of happiness for us forever. Right? People talk that way, don't we? Right? People write songs and poetry. And yet often we find out that it's really not the way it appeared. So it's in many, many ways. For ages now, you've been beguiled, entranced, and fooled by appearances. Are you aware of that? Are you? I like the way he does that, right? Because that is very important. Because we very quickly, the first time, go, oh, yeah, I get it. Oh, yeah, I get it. Yeah, yeah. Right? So he says, are you aware of that? And we say, oh, yes. And then he says, are you? He's going like, do you really get it? It's so easy to say intellectually, oh, I get it. I mean, and then the next day, there we go again. Fooled again, beguiled again, hooked again, off again. So I think it's very profound that he goes, are you aware of that? And then he goes, are you? It's like, you know, oftentimes when people answer, when you're asking them a meaningful question and they answer you right away, it's often good to go, you know, why don't we just stop a moment? Take a moment to really reflect deeply on that. I mean, is that really what you think? Is that really what you want? Take a moment, right? Some things are big. Usually we're very quick. But some things are like, you know, do I really believe in that? Do I really want that? Do I really value that? If somebody asks me, I say what? Yes, definitely. But yet when I look at how I live my life, I don't really live that way. So maybe that question, is it true? Am I really aware of that? Is good. Good to look deeply. He says, he's talking to himself, right this very instant when you're under the spell of mistaken perception, you've got to watch out. Right? So he's warning himself. Again, I like the way, again, this is a good translator too, under the spell. Do you ever feel like you're under the spell? Right? It's like, you know, I'm under the spell of the cookies in the pantry. You know, it's like we act this way. I'm under the spell of the Cheetos. I hear them calling me. Right? We are grown-ups, and yet we do talk this way, don't we? We're under the spell of something. I just was taken over. Right? I couldn't help myself. What does that mean, I couldn't help myself? Of course we could have helped ourselves, right? But we didn't, in that moment, we didn't want to help ourselves. Why? Because we were really under the spell of our what? Craving, our yearning, our emotions, right? I mean, emotions are an incredibly large part of our life that we are under the spell of, right? They rule us, they pull us, they cause us to act and react in certain ways, right? When all they are is what? A feeling, an emotion in the body-mind. They weren't there before, they won't be there an hour from now, and they've just arisen, right? And yet we are under their spell because they have a way of making us feel, deal, respond, act, react, relate that we might not have when we're not under that spell. Right? Anybody ever been under the spell of anger? Yes. When you're under the spell of anger, do you ever say and do things that are not really the way you usually speak and act? Yeah. We're under the spell of these feelings, and when we are, all our, not only all our learning and experience from the past, but all our, you know, all our good intentions, all our vows, all our oaths, all our, gone, right? We are under the spell. And we are under the spell of our anger and our resentments. We're under the spell of our hurts. We're under the spell of our fears, right? All like that. Which, to be under the spell means not only are they, have they arisen in me, but they've taken me over and are, I feel like I'm being forced to act in a certain way, right? Because again, you know, and we're just following through on this spell, you know, if there was a magician who came and sort of tried to cast a spell on me, right? I mean, I could let him or her do all their stuff, do all their incantations, wave their wands, and do all their, right? I don't have to fall under their spell, do I? No. In the same way, thoughts, feelings, perceptions, memories, all can be arising in my mind, but I don't have to fall under their spell. People could be inviting me to go down paths that I don't want to go down, but I don't have to fall under their spell, do I? I mean, they can't make me do anything I don't want to do, can they? No. So, I like that word, spell, and I like, you got to watch out. In Buddhist meditative training, there is a word called vigilance. And vigilance implies that I kind of know where I want to go and where I don't want to go. I kind of know the kind of thoughts and feelings that I do want to encourage within my mind stream and the ones I don't. Right? You know, all that kind of stuff. And vigilance means there's somebody watching. This is the problem. We set it all up, but there's nobody watching. Right? And if there's nobody watching, what? The undesirables will get in. The unwanted ones will get in. The thieves will take what they want, right? If there's nobody watching, if there's no guard at the gate. If there's a gate but no guard. So many of us, we have these intentions for how we want to live. We have this commitment of the kind of values we want to live by, the kind of mind states, the way we want to relate, the way we want to treat other people, the way we want to treat ourselves, that we'd no longer want to indulge ourselves in these kinds of, you know, mind states or negative activities, and right? We all often set it up, and then we what? And then we walk away. And we don't leave anybody at the gate, right? To monitor the coming and going. And then we wonder why, at the end of the day, you know, how all these mind states got in, right? How I indulge myself once again in all this kind of negativity or whatever. How did that happen? We're really kind of dumbfounded, aren't we? We're surprised, we're shocked, we're disappointed, we're frustrated. We think there's something wrong with us. But there isn't. It's just that we haven't posted anybody at the gate. The gate of our awareness, the gate of our mind, the gate of our activity. There's got to be somebody responsible. I mean, there's got to be somebody driving the bus. There's got to be somebody with their hand on the tiller. Or the boat will only go where? Wherever the wind blows it. wherever the tides take it. And many times we feel that way. We're just blown about by circumstances, by people, by situations, by emotions. We're, you know, even though we say, I want to go there, we wonder why we don't end up there. And it's because, again, there's nobody with their hand on the tiller all day. To have your hand on the tiller, you know, if you've ever gone sailing, doesn't mean it's straight. It can be a little back and forth, but it means generally we're always moving in that direction. But if there's nobody at the tiller, we could end spending all day, all week, all month, all lifetime, even though we want to go there, ending up always far away. So he says, do not let yourself get carried away by this fake and empty life. I mean, that sounds a little drastic. And many of us may take exception to that, right? Hey, we would say, what? There are good things in life, right? There are good things in life. Yeah. But again, Pachu Rinpoche, as I gave you a little sense, was an extremist, right? I mean, he wasn't interested in any of it. That was him. And sometimes it's good to have people like that, you know, who they kind of challenge us. So he says, don't let yourself get away by this fake and empty life. But yet I think he speaks to us. Fake means what? Not real. Empty means not full in this sense. And so I think it is worth saying, how often do I get carried away by activities that aren't give me any real grounded sense of reality? They're phony. They're fake. They're not real. They don't have any substance to them. And they don't give me a sense of fulfillment. You know, when you're fulfilled, you know, we all have moments of fulfillment, right? It's a feeling. We feel full. We feel whole in that moment. It's like, you know, after, if we've been hungry, right? And we have really a good, rich, nourishing meal, and we feel full in a good way. It's a contented feeling, right? It's like that. But this is more emotionally. He's talking. So we feel a fullness in life because we are taking, we are having experiences, we are having relationships, and we are having thoughts, feelings, and perceptions in our own mind that create that kind of fullness, authenticity of experience. Don't let yourself get carried away by this fake and empty life. Is it easy to get carried away? Yes. Right? Yes. You can't go anywhere without endless messages trying to pull us into this fake and empty life, right? Telling us that we need this, we need that, we got to buy this, we ought to sign up for that, we got to go see this, this is the latest this, right? It's endless. Anywhere we look, right? Whether we're driving down the highway, whether we're turning on the TV, going on the internet, you know, endlessly bombarded with messages. And if there's nobody home, if there's nobody watching out for us, it's without any effort, it's so easy to be carried away. Then he says, your mind is spinning. Now, again, he's talking to himself. So So please understand, this is not, I mean, he knows this from the inside. He's a great master, but he's willing to admit he knows these voices. Your mind, he's talking to himself, your mind is spinning around about carrying out a lot of useless projects. You'd think must be alive today. Right? We actually talk this way about all the projects we have in business and personal life, right? Life is about what? Projects. Thinking up projects, managing projects, fulfilling, right? It's all about endless projects. Your mind is spinning around about carrying out about a lot of useless projects. It's a waste. Give it up. And he's got exclamation points to himself. Thinking about the 100 plans you want to accomplish with never enough time to finish them just weighs down your mind. Anybody ever experience what he's talking about? I mean, right? I mean, this is 2013. I mean, this is the stress and strains of our present day. Everybody's got 100 plans they're running around to accomplish. Everybody's got their minds spinning around endlessly with all the things they got to do and not enough time. Right? How many people say that? There's just not enough time in the day for all the things that I need to do. Says, all of this is a waste, give it up, it just weighs down your mind. I am sure there are people listening right now who are objecting to this, right? Because if there's anybody who thinks that we have meaningful and important projects to work on, it is who? Us. Right? We think our life, the projects in our life, the things we need to accomplish, are the most important things in the world, right? And they must get done. Right? And it weighs us down. It weighs down our mind. You're completely distracted by all these projects which never come to an end, but keep spreading out more like ripples in water. Anybody ever have a to-do list? Right? And some people have big ones. They go on for pages. And yet we feel so good, right? When we what? Check them off. Progress. I'm getting my to-do list. You know, I have 5 projects to do this week. Friday comes and I've done them all. And then Monday comes. And what happens? We start out the week with what? A new list of the projects to be accomplished this week. How did he know this? I mean, this is like this is the 1800s in the mountains of eastern Tibet. And I mean, it's quite interesting. I mean, that this kind of terminology was used. So even though obviously, the cultural frame and the historical frame is very different, we might say. It's just very interesting that human beings were still up to the same stuff. Even in the monasteries, very busy. Lots of projects, lots of things to do, lots of things to accomplish, busy. Even monks and nuns are stressed. Their minds spinning around with all their projects. Never enough time. So these projects never come to an end. We all know that. The to-do list will never come to an end. There'll always be another one. There'll always be more projects that we will invent for ourselves that are very important and need to get done. And they keep spreading out like ripples in the water. and he says, "Don't be a fool. For once, just sit tight." Reminds me of Thich Nhat Hanh's famous turning things around, you know, his where instead of our way of saying things, don't just stand there, do something, right? Which is something we all grow up with. Don't just stand there, do something. When he heard that, he turned it around. He said, "Don't just do something, stand there." Which is, I think, what Patra Rinpoche is also saying. When he says you're being completely distracted by these projects, this is important. Because many of us, when we look at our project list for the week or the month, we say, oh no, these are important, they got to get done, right? My to-do list, all these things need to get done. So when he says distracted, we need to ask ourselves, distracted from what? You see, this is a very important point. Because if we think life is about projects, life is about to-do lists, right? Always working on our to-do lists, always having lots of projects in the fire and more and more and more, and always stressed out running from one to another, we think this is what? Normal, right? This is life. Right? Isn't life about, life is about accomplishing projects and then you die. And hopefully by the time you've died, you've accomplished most of your projects. So you feel good, right? So I think his thing about you're completely distracted by all these projects, I think what he's getting at is we're getting distracted from something. So all this busyness, all this activity, all these projects, all these endless to-dos are keeping us distracted from what? What?
Ourselves.
Ourselves. And the work we need to do on ourselves. You know, the who that is doing all these projects. Right? There's projects, there's activities, there's a to-do list, but then there is that person who is doing all that. You know, and the question is, how is that person? Are they happy? Are they at peace? Do they find great fulfillment and meaning in their life? Are they living a life that is congruent with their deepest aspirations? Do you see what I'm saying? That's what it's a distraction from. It's not that we can't justify all our projects. We can, and we do. They're all important, aren't they? Right? Everybody here have an important project they're working on these days? Good. Right? There we are. Yeah. Anybody have more than one? Yeah. We got it. So, again, and this is, I think, the difference between leading a kind of worldly life and leading a kind of a more spiritual or a more deeper life or whatever you want to call it, is a willingness to go, what about the person who's doing all this? Isn't that important? It's about a willingness to see the bigger picture of life, of our life. Because if we don't see the bigger picture, the bigger trajectory of our life, every project will be justified, won't it? Have you noticed that? That every project you do, there is a justification for why it's worth doing. And there probably are, right? And yet, it's only when we step back and look at the bigger picture of my life, of who I am, of how I want to be, right? That all of a sudden we might say these projects, while worthy in themselves, you see what I'm saying? I'm not saying they're not worthy in of themselves, but they are a distraction from the real work that I need to do. Don't be a fool for once, just sit tight. Thich Nhat Hanh often calls that stopping. He says we need to stop. If we don't stop, we cannot look deeply into life, into ourselves, into others, to see below the surface. There has to be the stopping. And I think that's what Patra Rinpoche is. Don't be a fool for once, just sit tight. There's got to be a pause. There's got to be a space. There's got to be a stopping with this busily unfolding trajectory of life and projects and to-do lists, you know, where we just stop, put it all down, and come back home. Now that is daily meditation, right? Having that in your life on a daily basis. That is learning to stop throughout the day, take periodic stops to check in. But that means also bigger ones, where we kind of step back for a day, for days, retreat or whatever, where we step back, where we can put down the projects, put down the busyness, put down the case to case, you know, all of them are meaningful, all of them are worthy, right? All of them need to be done, and go, you know, who am I? How is the doer doing? And am I really, putting my energy of my life into those kinds of activities that really will create the kind of life that I really want, the kind of relationships? You know, we can't just will it, can we? We can't just wish it. If we want to become an open, loving, caring human being that is capable of having those types of relationships, it can't just be another thing on our to-do list. Go to Home Depot, pick up to this, go to Publix, pick up to that, work on being a loving, caring human being, you know. You see what I'm saying? It's that kind of stuff is different than all of that. And many of us, you know, it's like that. I'll go on just a little bit more, then I'll take questions. He says, listening to the teachings. You've already heard hundreds of teachings. But when you haven't grasped the meaning of even one teaching, what's the point of more listening? Now, many of you may be listening to this teaching. You may immediately walk out saying, he's right. I haven't even mastered the first teaching I've heard, and yet here I am listening. So, I mean, I would accept that. That's probably... But, I mean, for all of us, right, you know, and this is, again, part of the way we often, because of our nature, of our society, and with the easy access to information, right, easy access to teachings, easy access to teachers, don't forget, in more traditional societies, right, you know, if you wanted, if you heard Pacho Rinpoche was giving a teaching at so-and-so, you might have had to kind of walk for a couple of weeks, you know, through not easy terrain. You know, we just have to what? You know, just turn on the internet and click. What teacher do we want to listen to now? Click, 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 click. Oh, here it is. It's easier. We just workshop in town. We sign up. So it's very easy. Or we go to a bookstore and, you know, hundreds of books, all teachings endlessly. We can, right? So the easy access of teachings, I think, often makes them less valuable. If you know that this teacher only comes through once a year, once every couple of years, right? When you hear his or her teaching, that may become more meaningful, right? Than if we think, oh, well, if I don't go this week, there's next week, and you know what I mean? It's a mindset that I think, in a certain way, diminishes the value. Listening to the teachings you've already heard, you know. So we're saying, you know, here you are again, listening to teachings. You've heard hundreds of teachings. But if you haven't grasped the meaning, what's the use of more listening? Right? You know, there's a certain kind of person who has a lot of energy. And they're always, you know, they're, what are they called? Starters but not finishers. You know what I mean? There are people who just go around and they're very good at initiating projects, but they never finish anything. You've probably been in some of their homes. You know, it's sort of like that. You know, we initiate all kinds of teachings, all kinds of practices, but we never complete them to the end before we start a new one and a new one and a new one. And so what he's saying, I think, is something very wonderful. Right? That it's not just about the accumulation of learning. It's not just about the accumulation of teachings. It's not just about accumulating more and more practices to do. Because all the practices are leading us to a certain type of realization, a certain type of transformation. That's what they're about. And we don't get it unless we practice it in a consistent way. We extract the meaning, right? So mindfulness is easy conceptually to get. But to actually experience our capacity to live in the moment with an empty mind that's totally present, and just feel the freedom of that, right? That is no longer just a practice, it's an experience. Is that clear? You know, sitting in meditation, if you have one moment of clarity, one moment where it just all stops, and all of a sudden things are just peaceful, open, right? You now know what? Yeah. Now I understand the meaning. So he's saying, you know, we need to extract the essence, even intellectually, you know, even with intellectual types of experiences or readings. In Buddhism, it's called reflecting on. Again, reflection is an intellectual process that takes ideas from just being up here to coming in here, right? It's like, oh. It's like, let's say you heard teachings today. And rather than just forgetting about them, when you go home, you reflected on them, right? You know, what does that really mean? And more importantly, what does that mean for me in my life? That's a, again, we can't be lazy. We have to reflect deeply. I mean, just in these few things, he's given us a lot, right? about, you know, beguiled by appearances, you know, by endlessly running after things, thinking they're sources of happiness. You know, do I do that? Do I do that? And how often do I do that? And where do I do it? You know, that thing about a watcher on the mind, vigilance, right? You know, I sort of have a sense of, I want to do this, I don't want to do this, I want to be like this, I don't want to be like that, I want to interact with the people I'm around in this way and not that way. But is there somebody at the gate? Or not? You see what I'm saying? So if we just read, or if we just consume talks in this kind of superficial way, it'll never produce transformation. Right? In the same way, if we just buy the food, but we never prepare it and we never eat it, how's it ever going to get digested? Right? It has to be digested. Just having lots of food in the kitchen is not fulfilling. Right? We could die of starvation, even though our larder is full. Right? In the same way, we can accumulate teachings. We can accumulate practices. We can talk a good game. Right? But if we don't live it, who are we fooling? Right? It's because of that capacity we have of fooling ourselves that I think Pacho Rinpoche is writing this thing. You know, it's like he's talking to himself. He's saying, what? Get real. Stop messing around. Don't be a hypocrite. Right? That may be hard for us, right? That's not like a message. That's not a very pretty message, is it? One of the things about Pacho Rinpoche that I remember now is he didn't suffer fools. Right? He didn't kiss up to anybody. He didn't sugarcoat anything. And people loved him for that. He was very compassionate. But, you know, it's like, you know, let's talk about the essence of things. Let's get real. He didn't. And you can see that he's doing that with his own self. So it's an interesting thing. I mean, how many of us have this kind of conversation with ourselves? How many of us are capable of having this kind of conversation? Which is not, you know, this is not, please understand, you know, people who have low self-esteem and a lot of self-hate and they're always criticizing, judging themselves. This is not that at all. Right? This is, he just wants to help himself. He hears the voice within himself that wants to lead an authentic life, and he's talking and saying, "Then, you know, then we have to get honest here." Right? He's having a very honest, open conversation with himself. It's a conversation among friends, right? Really good friends, we can be very open with each other. If you have a good friend, and if you're acting like a jerk, wouldn't you like your good friend to say to you, Fred, stop acting like a jerk, right? That'd be very helpful. But rather than just letting me continue acting like a jerk, right? And if it's a good friend, we'll be okay with that, right? We're not defensive. So, advice from me to myself. So we will continue. It's quite a wonderful text. So any questions or comments about what's been said here today? For those of you who are new, if you disagree with anything or think it's all a bunch of bull, that's fine too. You know, you don't have to, this is not dogma. So any questions about how to practice or put into place what we've talked about today? Don't be shy. Yes.
So the idea is if you have a graph of a person, what's the good and what is the name, what do you think he would have told himself?
So the question is, if you haven't gotten the first lesson and yet you're still accumulating teachings, what would he do? Well, I think, again, I hate to speak, I'll just speak for myself. I wouldn't presume to speak for Pacha Rinpoche. I think the answer is usually both and. Okay? Which means be clear that there are some very fundamental basic teachings that you got right from the beginning that you haven't really been accomplished at yet. And that's where you're putting your focus, okay? Because you want to get accomplishment there. You want to get realization. You want the fruits and benefits. And then if you're continuing to read or take teachings, take them in a way that nourishes that place, which is different than, I go hear this teacher 1 week, they tell to do it this way, so I follow them. 2 weeks later, I hear another teacher. That makes sense. Now I follow them and do these teachings. That's what he's talking about. So again, it's usually considered in Buddhism, that not the obsessive, but just the ongoing way of receiving teachings is nourishing, right? Because Dharma teachings are considered like rain, they're nourishing many seeds in us. But at the same time, you as a gardener, there may be some very specific ones that you want to grow. Right? So the rain comes, but you're kind of directing it toward these things that you really know at this stage of your life that you really need to be focusing on. Right. So again, usually good teachings are inspiring. They kind of remind us of what's really valuable. But then we got to take it back, to yourself. How do I take this in to really facilitate the change, the transformation, the healing that I need to be focusing on? Again, that's that capacity to be honest with oneself. We would all like to see that we would all like to think that we were great meditators, highly spiritual beings, right? But the truth is what? Many of us are just mucking around in the mud, right? That's the truth. So we need to be focused on how do I kind of get out of the mud? Or how do I at least, learn to walk in a more balanced way in the mud so I can begin to get myself out? That's what, So that it's like that. We practice where we're at. But at the same time, learning about other teachings and things kind of gives us inspiration for more possibilities. Any other questions? Good. So then we'll stop here. I think I'm coming back next week, and we will continue getting advice. We're kind of listening in. We're sort of listening in to Pacha Rinpoche talking to himself.